This podcast is brought to you with limited interruption by Rudy Luther Toyota. Whether looking for an exciting brand new Toyota, a certified pre-owned vehicle, or getting quality routine maintenance and service for your vehicle, Rudy Luther Toyota is the place to go. Rudy Luther Toyota, the southeast corner of 394 and 169 in Golden Valley. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show for your Wednesday. Matt, Brett, once again, Brett, a show where we have 2 hours to get basically 19 hours worth of news in. Dear Lord. We'll do our best. We get to Stein coming up here at 4:30. Colleen Moriarty is the executive director of Hunger Solutions Minnesota. She's going to join us in the 5 o'clock hour. But, Brett, like a lot of people out there, I'm a pet owner. I've got a dog. And unfortunately, I want to share something here because I think it's important to share some things here. But I had to go to the vet today, and it's always interesting because you once again it's important good information. We talk every year about motorcycles, keeping out for motorcycles when the motorcycles start hitting the road, keeping out, you know, swimmer safety. I mean, we've had a lot of problems with, you know, accidents, people having, unfortunately, drownings that have happened in the state. You want to be careful. You want to be aware. And so I want to start off, actually, while I was there, there was a person came in and they were frantically looking for a cat. And they said, it got out and, you know, it's outdoors most of the time, but it hasn't come back. Okay. I know there are cat owners out there like, my Mr. Buttons. And I say this every year. I say this every year. I know you think to yourself, my Mr. Buttons is cleaning clocks all over the neighborhood. You see that video of a cat scaring a bear in Alaska, and you say to yourself, Mr. Buttons could do that. You're a domesticated cat, although, you know, it does have some natural instincts. Doesn't have to go and hunt and kill its food every single meal. Do you know what does? Coyotes, foxes, raccoons. They do. And if Mr. Buttons gets into a mano-a-mano with one of those guys, it's over. They're not going to survive. I know you think they will because Mr. Buttons is tough. No, Mr. Buttons is going to be dead very quickly. And that's unfortunately, that's the reality. They're wild animals that eat other animals. Your cat is food. And I hate saying it like that, but if you let your cat out, I know you think to yourself, my cat only gets the mangy mice and the hobbling bunnies. No, it kills bunnies, it kills songbirds, kills blue jays, cardinals, it kills all these birds. And they don't eat them, they just kill them and walk away. Because they got a bowl of food waiting back at home. So they don't have to eat. And so and that's at best. And by the way, that's the beginning of the problems in the real world. Dogs, cars, humans, interstates. I highly encourage you. I understand you don't want to rein in that kitty cat spirit. Dude, you know, 1,000 years of breeding have reined in that kitty cat spirit, okay? That cat is an indoor cat. I know you might not like that. If you don't really want a pet, you just want something that stops by your house every 3 or 4 days, then I might suggest you don't get a cat. I might suggest that. If you're expecting other people to take care of your animal for you, and then every 3 days it shows up and you claim, it's my kitty. No, it's not really. But in that case, that cat's not going to make it. It doesn't know how to. So if I can just give some advice, if you have an indoor cat, do your best. Keep it indoors because that's not a good way to go for a cat. It's not a good way to go. My dad had the best golden retriever he ever had for hunting. Got behind his garage, cornered a raccoon, and they went at it. And my dad said the dog won. And my dad said, I never dreamed in a million years he'd win. And he came out damaged. That dog came out damaged. That was a raccoon. You know those cutted little bandits of the sewers? They'll take out an animal too very quickly.
I was just going to say you're definitely making the cat lobby angry today.
but it's the truth, and I want you to hear this. Post on a jerk, Brett.
I'm going to get these emails rolling in now because cat owners. Yeah,
Mr. Buttons and I are not amused by Mr. McNeil's show. We are going to let you know. We are going to write some letters. Is Mr. Buttons going to write the letters? Because that's a trained cat at that point. I don't want your cat injured. I don't want your cat dead. I don't. And you, where you feel as if it's some kind of great conquest that your cat might kill a blue jay or something like that, it's not going to win in a fox or a coyote. It's not. It's not. It's just not. And you want to be careful, okay? Please. For the benefit of the animal. For the benefit of you, because you'll be sad. I mean, this woman was tormented. She couldn't find her cat. So, please. Just a little bit of advice, okay?
The only thing the cat owners are hearing is Matt hates cats.
I was playing with a kitty. I was at the vet. They had one of the kitties in the lobby. I was playing. Meow, meow, meow. This is actually a little funny. There were two elderly ladies there with a dog. Now, this was like a medium-sized bulldog that was way too overweight to the point where like every 15 minutes the bulldog was like splayed on the floor. And to have this vet assistant come on out and sort of say, you know, I just want to let you know that your dog has a little bit of an obesity problem. And they're like, really? You know, like this. You could use that dog for curling. I mean, he was just, he was flat. And, you know, to the vet tech guy, and all bless him. He sat there and explained, okay, here's your diet. Here's the medication. You know, he's got conditions. Let's get this worked on and stuff like that.
You think the dog or Donald Trump could run further?
That's a debate for the ages, Brett. That's a debate for the ages. The main reason I'm bringing this whole story up, though, is actually because I want everyone to be careful out there. I think this is very, very important. A few weeks ago, if I'm not mistaken, didn't we have a kid tragically die of Rocky Mountain spotted fever? And they likely got it from a tick, right? Here's the story. So my dog yesterday just started going downhill, and it's like, okay, what's going on here? You know, wasn't eating, all this stuff, we were concerned. Took him in today, lots of tests, everything else looking great. Eventually the doctor comes out and said, we don't really have a test for Rocky Mountain spotted fever, but I'm almost positive it's Rocky Mountain spotted fever. It's either that or another kind of infection. Needless to say, I've got medication. Hopefully my dog bounces back. Now, this is not a confirmation, and I want to be very clear. My vet did not say that their dog definitively has Rocky Mountain spotted fever. But that would be the second time I've heard it. Now it's affected me, and this is not my job necessarily to be a news person. I am not. But I am going to put out the alert. Rocky Mountain spotted fever is not a freaking joke. It is not. It is a very serious disease. And it can affect people. It can affect animals. So I want everyone to be careful out there, because if this was, then all of a sudden that's the second case I've now heard of. And the tick, this year is supposed to be a horrific year for ticks. It's supposed to be a really bad year. A lot of ticks this year. And my dog is on all the medications for, you know, the flea and tick medications and, you know, all that good stuff. But, you know, it's, you know, they're never 100% proof. So we got to kind of be careful out there. Just keep that in mind. And I don't know. Like I said, there is no test. And I want to be very clear. My vet, fantastic, by the way, fantastic vet, was very clear that this is not an official diagnosis. I just want to put that out there, because that's now the second time I've heard Rocky Mountain spotted fever. And unfortunately, this time it affected my dog, possibly, if it is indeed the diagnosis. And hopefully it's something that it does sound like it's very treatable in the dog, hopefully. But just keep that in mind, because it was. Wasn't it, Brett, a few weeks ago we had, unfortunately, there's a child that died of Rocky Mountain spotted fever up north, somewhere in northern Minnesota somewhere, if I remember correctly.
Oh, I don't remember myself.
I think it was bringmethenews.com. Maybe we should check that out. Well, while we do that, Lynette is in Chaska. Lynette, thank you very much. I appreciate your time for holding.
Yeah, I just wanted to weigh in on the cat inside, outside. I've had a lot of cats throughout my life, and I have learned that, yes, it is better to have them in. And, I mean, you can train. If you get a cat from a kitten, you can train them to be on a leash, and then they can be outside that way. I'm ordering for my cat right now, who's from the Humane Society, who desperately wants to go outside. I'm going to get like a cat tunnel thing from, I can put her outside, and then I'll just, you know, she can be out there, but she won't wander off, and she won't kill birds. And cats kill tons of birds.
Yes.
It's terrible. And it's sad to see. And then the cat I had before, she had gotten attacked by a coyote. She eventually got hit on the road. Ooh. And so, it's not safe to have the cat wandering around. Plus, I mean, now I have rabbits showing up in the back, because where I live, there's a lot of feral cats. And Luckily, the neighbor that had them finally did something about them. I don't know what he did, but the rabbits are finally coming out to eat now because they were so afraid of the cats that were always out there.
It changes. And Lynette, thank you very much. I appreciate that. And one thing we've learned is you have introduced a cat, a domestic cat. I mean, we have cats, native cats here. We have lynx. We have mountain lions. I'm not sure. I don't think there might be one more. I'm not sure. But those are the native cats. If you introduce a cat into a neighborhood that's not a native species, you've just introduced a predator. You might as well, you know, start chucking sharks into lakes. I mean, because you just, what could go wrong? No, but you got to be careful because, you know, her point is right, is that, and listen to both sides of that. Killed a lot of songbirds? Well, what as good as that? And then on the other side, got attacked by a coyote, which I can't imagine that was a cheap medical bill from the vet, then only to get hit by a car. And my best, Lynette, I'm sorry about the loss of your cat there. But be careful out there. 952-946-6205. I'll tell you what, we're going to change up topics. So let's take the break a little early. I'll come back. We got to a good milestone here in Minnesota, but I also have we got a sports update coming up after the break. It's important information we all need if you're head of the Senate Environmental Committee. We'll get to that in just a moment. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show. 952-946-6205. You know, Brett, it's tough. It is tough. It's summer. Yeah, it's been dry, but man, you're stuck inside. You got to work, you know. It's got to be hard. Here you are, maybe, I don't know, the head of the Senate Committee on Environmental Affairs. I mean, let's just pull some random position out of the blue. And here you are. It's the end of special regular session. You haven't finished things up. Now you got to blabbity, blabbity, blabbity with all the DFLers and find out some negotiation. And you want to have a pity party because you don't like clean cars. People should only buy the cars I say they should buy because I'm a god. And you kind of get, it's hard. And here you are. You got to put on a suit and tie and you look like a big stick of chalk. And, you know, you're walking on in and got to sit down and talk, even on Skype and FaceTime. Oh, my God, I don't want to talk to this papa. Why don't you do what I want on clean cars? And you look out the window, and there's that lake. It's just calling to you. Just want to get out there. Well, here you go. Just to appease you a little bit, it's time to go welcome to Alaska. There we are, a little Alaska music. It's time for your Alaskan fishing update, courtesy of Senator Large Jar of Marshmallow. Senator Bill Ingebrigtsen, the head of the Senate Environmental Committee, who on the first day of special session apparently decided to go fishing in Alaska as they're trying to work out the final bills to keep the state open. That's right. Beautiful Alaska with its majesty and splendor. Why fish one of our inferior Minnesota lakes? I guess Bill Ingebrigtsen doesn't like them. With all their fish and local tourism dollars. No, 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 no. Senator Ingebrigtsen couldn't wait to get out of town and head to beautiful Alaska. So, let's find out the Alaskan fishing update. Let's go to Senator Large Piece of Chalk, Bill Ingebrigtsen, and see how things are going.
I'm only here for the whitefish.
Thank you, Senator. It's delightful. There you are, the Alaskan fishing update, courtesy of the guy who is supposed to be in the freaking special session negotiating the environmental bill, but because he had to go get his fish on in another state and spend his money in some other state's tourism dollars, he decided he had to leave. That's leadership we all can mock and ridicule. The Alaskan fishing update, courtesy of AM 950. I can't believe that idiot did that. Oh, boy. I mean, it's not as good as those Alec junkets, though. Oh, God, the Alec junkets with those shrimp bars. Oh, and the chocolate fountains. Oh, Mormon Tabernacle Choir singing. That's just great stuff. Although, if you can get the Mormon Tabernacle Choir on your fishing boat while you're fishing in Alaska, now that would be something special. Is he on a cruise ship? Has he got like a big line off him? got like 500 yards of line off the back of a cruise ship in Alaska or something. That's a good troll. I hope you got some heavy-duty pound line on there, because that's going to take a little bit of reeling. I hope you have the extender on the net. You're going to need that.
The Morbin Tabernacle Choir Alaskan Cruise, featuring Senator Bill Ingebrigtsen as your master of ceremonies.
The show tonight, Powder, performed in a snowstorm. God, that is like the whitest excursion of all time. Who likes mayonnaise? 952-947. Brought to you by Hellman's. 952-942-946-6205. We make jokes. We're children. What are we supposed to do? I mean, I'm a train chimp. Come on. Let's get into the Minnesota coronavirus update, because we do have a good number here to report. More than 3 million people have received COVID vaccine in Minnesota, which is behind pace on its immunization goals, but has administered enough shots to slow the spread of the pandemic. Health officials said vaccinated progress short-circuited this spring's pandemic wave, reducing the positivity rate of COVID-19 testing from 7.5% to 1.8% over the past 2 months, lowering the number of COVID-19 hospitalizations in the state from 699 on April 14th to 151 on Monday. The Minnesota Department of Health on Wednesday reported 91 new infections, only the second daily figures below 100 since April of 2020, and 5 more COVID-19 deaths. Very sorry to everyone. I'm very sorry. The state's totals in the pandemic are now 604,052 infections, 7,523 deaths. While 66% of people 16 and older have received at least the first dose of the COVID-19 vaccine in Minnesota, the state is behind the pace of daily shots needed to reach its goal by 70% by July 1st. Ideally, I'd like to see it up by 90% of people vaccinated, because that really is going to keep the rates of infection low, said Dr. Susan Klein, an infectious disease specialist at the University of Minnesota Medical School. Minnesota just needed just over 80 days once COVID-19 vaccine was available in mid-December to provide doses to 1 million people, initially reserving scarce supplies for healthcare workers, long-term care facility residents, before making senior citizens and teachers eligible in mid-January. It then took only 36 days over March and April to reach 2 million. The state eventually made vaccine available to all people 16 and older, reaching 3 million. Took 66 days, despite broad access to vaccine and expansion of eligibility to people 12 and older. Klein says there are vaccination progress in Minnesota is somewhat familiar with the initial surge of interest giving way because hesitancy and safety concerns among remaining unvaccinated people. Someone brought up a point I believe this was a Facebook post I saw, and probably my private Facebook. But they brought the point up. It says, what's going to happen is, if all of a sudden another variant emerges, that you will see those numbers, the vaccine numbers, jump back up again. That people are just complacent now because they think it's going away. But if we see a variant rise, and just we start seeing, like we did this spring where we saw pockets associated with the school sports programs, not saying it's going to be school sports programs, but we start seeing pockets show up around Minnesota, that you're going to see a lot of people who might have been hesitant to get the vaccine scramble to try to go get it. And I agree with that, actually. I think that it's the complacency which is the problem right now. The initial expansion of vaccine to eligible adults was faster than expected. Klein said, creating a level of protection in Minnesota that dampened the spring pandemic wave. I don't think we should give up, he said. We should keep working on encouraging those who haven't been vaccinated to be vaccinated, and to make it really easy and accessible for them to get. State strategies have included the conversion of buses into mobile vaccine clinics to improve access for people with transportation barriers, or busy work schedules, and financial incentives. The state offered $25 Visa gift cards to free passes to state parks, Valley Fair, and other attractions to 100,000 people who received their first doses between May 21st and June 30th. Are they out of those? Excuse me. Here we go. It's not. So far, apparently only 9,906 people have registered to receive the vaccine awards, even though more than 110,000 people have received their first doses in that time frame, which means there's a lot of people who, what do you want? Do you want a $25 gift card? You want $25? Why not? Get the state parks pass. If Senator Chumbalone over there doesn't shut down the state parks, that park pass, that's a year of gold right there. That is a year of gold. The entire state, great parks. By all means, please get that one. Valley Fair, who doesn't like Valley Fair, man? Other attractions as well. Plus, a lot of places have the beer still, don't they? And a lot of places, you get vaccinated, you get a beer? Isn't that still going on? What's that?
That's still got to be going on.
Yeah, that's got to be going on. Whether you pay for it or not, it just kind of happens. No, but I think there are still the incentives for that as well with some of the microbrews. So there's a lot out there. So only 9,000, basically 90,000 of these rewards are still available. Everyone, listen to me. If you got vaccinated between May 27th and June 30th, if you got your first dose between May 27th and June 30th, you can just register and get one of these things. Go, please. No, seriously, that's money on the table. I encourage that. Of course, the gift cards remain the most popular item. The vaccine recipients in Minnesota are eligible for free discounted beers and drinks if they bring proof of vaccination to various breweries and distilleries. Minnesota is among 24 states that have offered such vaccine initiatives, according to the National Governors Association, although the approaches have been varied dramatically. While Maine has similarly offered free passes to attractions, Ohio and several other states offered cash lotteries. I'm not sure about that one. That's kind of an all or nothing. I like our approach just because it gives people options, and it's a variety. So if you like outdoor stuff, we got stuff for that. You want to go Valley Fair? Great there. Were fair passes part of that? I don't think they were. I don't know. I'll check that. But yeah, there are just a lot of things. And of course, you've won $25 of cash. Vaccine recipients in Alabama can take 2 laps at highway speed around Talladega Super Speedway. Now, okay. Years ago, I worked for a company called Blakeway Panoramas, and we did panoramic pictures of the NASCAR tracks. I've been to Talladega. The banks on that track, if you're doing that at 60, you're going to roll down the track because that's at an angle. You need to hit that thing with some power and some straightaway. So stay down in the caution lane, okay? I'm just going to give you a warning there because it doesn't do you any good to get vaccinated and then roll your car at Talladega. I'm just going to say, well, you know, maybe that's a weird incentive, but... I've been there. That wall, have you ever seen that? It's like almost vertical. I mean, you have to be hitting that thing flying to stay up on there. I mean, it's like an amusement park ride. You're not going to be, you're doing 60. You're coming, your caravan's going to come rolling down that thing. Your Prius ain't going to make it around. I'm just going to let you know. So good luck. Take advantage of the benefits. They're out there. Just sign up. If you got your first dose between the 27th and June 30th, so it's still time to get them, get your free stuff. Get your free stuff. I'd love us to be like Vermont. They're at 80%. Vermont's at 80%. Hawaii's right behind them. We're still struggling because we have a lot of Republican-held districts in the state who have the people there, the leaders there, have built up distrust for these vaccines. And that's a shame because you know what? Right now, the only people that are being, for the most part, the only people being admitted to hospitals with coronavirus are the ones who are unvaccinated. I don't want you to die. I don't want you getting sick. And I sure as heck don't want to see your family bankrupted by decades of medical debt. So please, I beg you, I implore you. You might think it's just some liberal. No, I don't want you dead. I don't want you sick. I don't want you poor. Go get vaccinated. It's free while they last. If the people who lead your community are too much of cowards or shills to basically tell you the truth, at least I'll be honest and say, I don't want you to die. And that's an honest statement. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. All right. When we come back, Stein and a lot more to come up the rest of the show. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950.
Jeff.
AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. Jeff, it is the Matt McNeil Show. Jeff Stein is our national and presidential expert. You can find his books at Next Chapter Books. Hey, still time to get his one for Father's Day. That's coming up this weekend. Make sure you stop by for that. Also, totallyiowa.com, the Iowa Business Reports, the daily show he does down in Iowa. Very good stuff. And, of course, the Iowa Politics Report comes from us from KXEL Cedar Falls, Waterloo, where Jeff is stationed. Hey, Jeff.
That song just keeps going. I didn't realize it just kept going and going and going. It's tremendous.
It is. It goes on like Joe Biden going after Steve Ducey at a press conference.
I apologize.
Oh, that was a loaded – boy, was that a loaded question from Ducey.
Yes, but I'm now reading. The email just came through from the White House. This is the transcription of the president at the airport. I owe my last question an apology. I shouldn't have been such a wise guy.
No, that was not him. He was right before that. That was a CNN person who, when she asked about, you know, how are you going to get him to compromise? No, he didn't apologize for Ducey. He didn't apologize for Ducey.
I just like the fact, how do you like the fact that your president, who hands out aviator sunglasses to foreign leaders, then says, yeah, I was being a wise guy. I don't know. I liked it. I don't know.
Okay, let's look at that. Let's go. We're going to spend some time here, and actually we're going to get into, I mean, it's a little wonky, but European trade, but it's a big impact issue because, sure. Let's face it, you know, the tone here at the G7, I mean, there were six other people up there with Joe Biden who were clearly very happy to be up there with Joe Biden. There was one guy today who clearly was not happy to be up there with Joe Biden. The tone clearly has changed, and especially let's start with the European leaders, the G7, or the world leaders, G7 leaders. The idea that I think they're clearly, from the rest of the world's perspective, I'm glad we're dealing with Joe Biden. Now, that came across very clear.
It did, and it's not political.
No.
It is because some
are... a little bit, but no, you're right. It's mostly not because, and I'll get to that in a second, but go ahead, please.
Yeah, the Biden critics, we're on the same page here. The Biden critics are going to say, well, that's because he's so soft on him. No, it has to do with decorum. It has to do with protocol. It has to do with what they're used to. And if you'll recall, during one of these meetings, they were going to do the family portrait kind of thing, and Trump literally elbowed two people out of the way to get in the front row. You remember that?
Yeah, well, I do.
And yes, this was socially distant. But, I mean, the idea is somebody was going to break the rules because that was his thing, and Biden fits what they're used to. And so from that perspective, very clearly, they're glad to have that guy, and you could tell in the interactions afterwards. I am curious, and I'd be interested in your thoughts. So far, they said there was no joint news conference between Putin and Biden after the summit. And I kept hearing people saying that was Biden's idea or the U.S.'s idea. And, of course, those in the right are saying, well, he doesn't want to be seen next to Putin because he can't measure up. I think it was probably Putin's idea, and Putin went first and then got out of Dodge.
Yes.
Before Biden spoke.
I think because Putin – all right, Putin's an evil dictator, but he's politically leader. As a political leader, he knows against Trump he looks very superior. Against Biden, who has no problem smacking back on him, that's the last thing he wants, is to be in a press conference and all of a sudden have Biden smacking back. Plus the fact that, you know – I think from Biden's perspective, why give the guy more validity than he already has? And I can see why the White House might have said, you know, we're going to kibosh this idea because, you know what? No, we're meeting with him. That's the validity he gets. He doesn't need us to do the dog and pony show at the press conference.
You've got Putin. I mean, look what he did. And this, in one analysis I saw, they said it's typical Putin when he's asked questions about Russian atrocities. He doesn't answer that. He says, well, what about your country? What about this? What about that? And he could not do that with the president of the United States at the other podium to fact check him.
And that, you know, he knows it would have been a disaster for him. And, you know, as opposed to Trump saying, is this a soccer ball? You know, it's kind of one of those things where you have to be politically savvy enough to get off the stage if you know I'm about to get upstaged. And that was it. And Biden, you know, he does have his gaffes. And by the way, if you didn't see the Dana Carvey impression of him, which is so perfect that they did on Colbert, it's absolutely spot on. He does his gaffes. He has his quirks. But the reality is the guy does not back down. And that's not something that Putin likes. I want to get back to the G7, though, because when we get back to that foreign trade, because there is a – Biden has walked into a golden opportunity. Brexit was a nightmare for Britain. That was one of the – I don't know how much you've read about it, but the negotiations from the British side were nightmarish. Everything they did seemed to actually hurt their trade markets far worse than tried to help them. They are frantically in try-to-recoup mode. So you've got England, obviously, looking to renew their trade agreements with their old ally, the United States. You got the rest of the G7 and the rest of the EU, as a matter of fact, as well, saying, hey, America's back. We love a good, powerful America. Might not be as desperate as Britain, but still, they like that America. And on the same side, you got Biden coming in after Trump put a lot of these tariffs in. And I was reading a little bit about the whiskey tariffs. And, you know, the same people that when Trump was putting them in there saying, yes, this is going to kill our business, but we support Trump, are now like, why aren't these being rescinded? So you have Biden has been given a real golden opportunity, you know, in ag. You got, of course, Iowa with the ag sector, the industrial Midwest, all, you know, all these auxiliary things, cranberries, you know, whiskey. You got tech issues from California. He has the ability to lift these tariffs, get really good trade. I mean, they're desperate, especially Britain. They're desperate for trade deals. He is in a power position. It really is a bit of a gift because not because of necessarily anything he's done, but by what Trump did and by what Brexit did, he has a real opportunity on the world stage to help the United States with some serious positive trade agreements.
In light of the COVID pandemic on top of it.
Yes, exactly.
It's a perfect storm in that respect. Old Boris there from Great Britain, you know, his whole thing going into the whole into all of this is we can do better alone and we'll do all these bilateral agreements. And by gosh, we're going to be great. And the Trump administration played along in the very early days with a couple of these agreements. And, you know, it's as you say, they're hurting now. And so the whole deck has been shuffled because of COVID and how some of these nations are still in the throes of lockdowns, et cetera. And so you've got the United States has the opportunity to not only come out with a gloved hand and offer some friendship, but also be able to help our own people who have not recovered uniformly, clearly, from the economic impact of the pandemic. So there's an opportunity here that I don't know is served by people saying in questions, hey, how come you're not going to knock down those tariffs? You said you were going to do it. It's like, hey, can't undo everything in one day.
Exactly.
You know, I mean, it takes some time. And I will say this. You and I have done these conversations through the phone, through Skype, through whatever magic and voodoo. The last time you and I did a radio program in the same studio was at least 10, if not 12 years ago.
Yeah.
And it wasn't at this radio station. So I'm just, and so there's a point to be made. And that is, we have pretty good conversations because we do this every week. But there's nothing, and we've all learned this, Zoom and Skype does not replace being across the table from someone. And so for this G7, there didn't need to be anything that came out of it. And in particular, the bilateral meeting between Putin and Biden, nothing needed to come of it other than an introduction, a conversation across the table, look them in the eye, size them up, and just open the door. And that's one of the things that President Biden said. Look, there was a lot of hype about this meeting, you know, Biden and Putin. Really, they just needed to establish the relationship. Nothing needed to come of it. Nothing was ever going to come of it. And neither one came away. Well, as Biden said, I did what I came here to do.
Yeah.
And there is nothing to replace across the table, look him in the eye, etc. And so he was able to do that. And then the hard work now begins as you try to build upon that with the second tier officials who do all of the real serious negotiating.
And that's how governments work. Two other observations I wanted to make about this. First of all, you remember how we were talking, and I'll get back to Putin here in a second, but the difference between how Putin reacted to Trump and Biden, how different he looked. I want to look at Boris Johnson because Boris Johnson – when Trump was in there, he looked like a passable leader. With Biden there, Boris Johnson looks like a freaking intern. And the rest of the G7, it was like, okay, who's this guy? I mean, it was so – the worst thing I think that can happen to Boris Johnson is Trump off the world stage, because now whereas the rest of the G7 look, you know, like Biden, negotiators, we're going to set this up. We agree. Great. Here's our people. There's your people. Let's work this out. Here's Boris Johnson. Like, yeah, my wife's pretty too. You know, like, oh, my God. He really does He needed Trump to look more legitimate, and with Biden there, he does look like a second-tier world leader. And that, you know, once again, it plays in Biden's hands because, once again, England's a good trade partner. They need us. We need them. Great. We can work with them, and we can take advantage of some things. But at the same time, it is stark how Boris Johnson, how bad he looked now.
Yeah, and I'm sorry for jumping in, but, I mean, didn't Boris Johnson come to power in the shadow of Trump?
Yes.
I mean, in essence, he looked like Trump, you know, the whole bit. Okay, well, now there's no comparison, to your point. Now he's just the weird guy who, oh, you're hosting this? Oh, okay, well, can you get me another canopy? Oh, you're not serving people, you're actually paying for it. Okay. You know, it's again, the rumpled outsider look. He's got that down, but I'm not sure this is that time now.
And especially with all the trade things that are blowing up over there. One of the other things, too, and I love how you said it, where the fact it's, okay, we're just establishing protocol. We're back. You're G7, clearly. Hey, buddies, good to see you again from Biden. That's another thing I think that really was for Putin was tough, is that he had done so well at undermining what was thought to be unbreakable bonds between the U.S. and the rest of the world. And Biden, just in this one very quick meeting, said, nope, we're back with them. You guys are, you know, we trust you. Or, you know, in the way he does it, in the political way, we trust you, you're Russia, we respect you, but these are our allies. I'll say hi to you, and we're out the door. I think one of the things that really came off for Putin is that his window to take advantage of this is over. And any advantages he got, which he did, I mean, he definitely got some advantages under Trump in regards, especially foreign policy and some allies and allegiances, especially in the Middle East. But the reality is that the establishment has been remade. We're with the G7. We're with the EU. We're with England. We're with our Pacific trade partners as well, and the South American trade partners. And we're not, you know, Russia is no longer getting top billing here. And I think that that established a lot right there as well. Your thoughts?
I don't like the phrase America is back because America never left.
True.
It's a different way of doing it. And I'm not trying to be harsh on you, but I mean, Biden has said that a lot. America's back. Well, his approach to America is back. His policies are back. Okay,
well, but I mean, make America great again, too. I mean, it's like you can, you know, it's I can understand what you're saying in regards to America is back. But I mean, to a point. You know, Reagan did it. I mean, you know, Obama did. I mean, you know, it's you create an image and you push that image. I mean, and that is part of America, is making people there. And America is back. It's a good one to go with, especially when everyone at the G7 is like, you're back.
Well, when they're grabbing at your ankle, yes, saying, thank God you're back. Yeah, I know that is an awkward image. Luckily, that wasn't photographed. But no, I mean, that's. But to the broader point, what he's doing is saying, you know, this is my view of the world, and I believe in protocol, and I don't believe in blowing everything up, and I got 50 years of experience to support what it is that I do, and that's what those other folks are going to be much more comfortable with. I was confused about one thing.
Yeah.
And this is why when he was over there, they, being the White House, released the plan to combat domestic terrorism. I'm not sure why they did it when they did it. It seems to me that it could have undercut what was going on there. You could have waited to roll that out until he came back. I don't know how it helped us there. In other words, by rolling out the new U.S. plan to combat domestic terrorism, how does that help him in negotiating with these folks? And again, I say this only because for a White House that has been so on message, I'm not saying I agree with the message, I'm just simply saying they have been very much focused on message. That had a little hiccup that I did not quite understand because it had the potential to be taking away from him. Now, my email comes in with everything from the White House. Okay, I get the, here's the everything that comes from the White House press office.
Strawberry ice cream day, stuff like that. Yeah, you get everything, yeah.
Strawberry ice cream.
Hey, I'm not against it. I'm all for it, man.
Sprinkles, by gosh, you're not doing it right. So I'm saying that, you know, yes, I do see a lot of it, and anybody who's on the mailing list, I'm not special. I'm just saying I see a lot of it, and so it seemed out of context. I'm not sure to the broad consumers they picked up on it. It just seemed like an odd thing because I thought the focus really ought to be – because they made sure that the vice president was back in Washington and wasn't doing anything that would detract. And so I thought this was a little odd that they did that, but maybe they were, you know, I don't know. I don't know what to make
I've
of that.
I've got a theory.
Rare change.
I got a theory on this, and I don't think it has anything to do with EU. It has to do with going on. As a matter of fact, when we come on back, I want to talk a little bit about what is clearly a ramping up of motivation by the Democrats in the House and the Senate to say, okay, enough, enough. We're looking at 1-6, and we're going to do a thorough investigation. We'll take a break. Come on back. Jeff Stein joining us, 952-946-6205. And I do want to make one quick little plea. If you do need a Father's Day gift, go to the Next Chapter Books. Get one of his books. They are a very good book. They're like a nice little Father's Day gift. We'll take a break. Come on back. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show. 952-946-6205. Jeff Stein is joining us. Jeff, and I want to get into what you said about the domestic terrorist report, basically saying that these right-wing terrorist groups are not done and they are going to strike back and you better be prepared for it. We put this in conjunction, though, with a lot of other news that's coming out. And whether it's you know, 21 Republicans voting against honoring the Capitol Police for saving their butts during the insurrection attempt on 1-6, to the idea that Gosar today is out there saying Ashley Babbitt was murdered or targeted by a police officer when she tried to storm the U.S. House, and a security guard saving the Congress people, you know, shot her, she was trying to invade the Capitol building. You have this very vocal, very small Republican pro 1-6 group who clearly are trying to desperately rewrite history, change history, present it in a different light. You also have these attempts to still try to prop up Trump. I mean, there's the laughable event they had over in Wisconsin here with Mike Lindell, and, you know, 1,000 people show up. I mean, that's county fair headline act night. There's no one there. And yet they want this to be something more than what it is. The Arizona recount is a joke. I mean, it's clearly that the entire election process is being compromised on there, probably for profit margins too, I should imagine. But you've got this element out there, and I think what you're getting is people are finally saying, no, we are going to investigate this. We are going to put this forth. We are not going to take this lightly, because if we don't, we are only asking for this to become worse. And there have been cases in history of America where there have been these insurrections where the Whiskey Rebellion and stuff like that, where people, if they don't smack back on that and they take and hold people accountable, it can, you know, become worse, a.k.a. something like the Civil War with the Confederates. So I think that's what you're looking at. I think when the White House put that out, I think this is starting to become a much more concerted, coordinated effort to say, okay, your clown show is over. We don't care that there are sitting congresspeople and senators who might be compromised here. The reality is our government almost fell on 1-6, as close as that got, and that was scary. We are not going to tolerate this, and I think that's where they're going from here.
The key to me on this is security, and why is it that the Capitol Police Force was not able to either anticipate or guard against this, given the fact that a decade ago, a plane was headed for the Capitol building, all right? I mean, on 9/11, right? So how is it that systemically we either didn't share information, we didn't have a robust enough police force, we didn't – I mean, I
can tell you a little bit – If I may jump in, when Black Lives Matter was going to have a protest there, the White House took over, basically brought out every freaking military person they could and coordinated a response, because Washington, D.C., as not being a state, is a unique judicial setup there. And that comes basically from the White House. Clearly, and this is something that's undeniable at this point, there was a lot of downplaying. The Secretary of Defense was not being active. I mean, it quite literally got to a point where they tried, and frankly, I'm going to be blunt, that White House gave those insurrectionists as much time as they possibly could before they even themselves had to have Trump come out there going, I love you, time to go home, like it's a closing bar. No, it was – they didn't take it seriously, because I think that the White House did not want it taken seriously.
Well, again, I love your Trump impression, and I'm going to miss it the next couple of weeks. But the Capitol takes care of itself. And so how the Capitol – and again, this is not finger pointing. This is what I'm concerned about as a citizen. How is it that the Capitol Police was not able to stop that? Because if they couldn't stop that, then what other things can they potentially not stop? And so that's a real concern, because no one should have gotten that close. No officer should have been in harm's way. Nobody should have been hurt. Nobody should have died that day. Is it an intelligence issue? Is it a staffing issue? I think you got to get that figured out because you have the potential. I mean, I'm concerned about domestic terrorism. I'm concerned about non-domestic terrorism. And so I think if anything, if this is not taken, Matt, as a wake-up call for what can happen, then we're just being stupid. Then we're just saying, yeah, go work in Washington and take your own lives in your hands. And that's not right. We shouldn't ask that of our public servants.
And you're exactly right, because and this is why this is so multifaceted, is that it's not just about what did happen, who was involved, what, you know, who was helping to plan it. It's, okay, how do we never have this happen again? And the unfortunate thing, I think, is you're going to look at is that eventually if it becomes too much of a hard target in the U.S. Capitol, they'll target some state capitol. And that's going to be that will be just as much as a wake-up call.
And it'll be even worse because arguably the state capitals are even less prepared because there has traditionally been less of a threat.
Absolutely. I would agree with that wholeheartedly. I mean, I'm very concerned about Oregon. I'm very concerned about Idaho, if you want to know the truth. Those two particularly at this point. Jeff, once again, I do want to make sure everyone knows books at Next Chapter Books and TotallyIowa.com. You and I, we'll talk after the 4th of July, okay?
After Independence Day.
I'm just saying a date on the calendar. You're the one. The holiday, of course. That's a Sunday. But we wouldn't talk on a Sunday. We'll talk on the Wednesday, okay?
Take care.
You take care. Jeff Stein, once again, kind enough to join us from KXEL. We'll spotlight that interview. We'll also get the Iowa Politics Report a little bit later on. Thank you very much, Jeff. When we come on back, we're going to talk about a great program, Snap at the Farmers Markets. It's the Matt McNeil Show on AM 950. The progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show. Hour number two on a Wednesday. Matt Brett here today. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. Brett, you know, one thing I like is when I can point at something that the government does that they had done so freaking amazingly well that it deserves accolades. And let me give you an example of this. I needed to do some work and I needed to get a permit from the DNR to do it. Okay. So on a Sunday night, I went up, pulled up the DNR site. Now, I'd filled out a permit before for something similar to this a few years ago, so all my information was in the computer. I went there, said, renew my permit. All right, did. That was a Sunday night. By Monday morning at 8 a.m. in my inbox was a, we've gotten your pre-approval. You need to pay the license fee for it, and then we will put it through the approval process. At 8:30 in the morning, the next morning, I put my credit card information in. By 3:30 that afternoon, the DNR had approved my permit. 3 days later, I got the packet in the mail with all the signs and the postings that I needed. Done. How is that not just competent, efficient government at work? I need something. I fill it out. Interaction. Done. Just a great example that government sometimes really does work. Which is why we have to do everything to save a program known as Market Bucks, also known as Healthy Eating Here at Home program. It is a phenomenal program that allows people to take their SNAP benefits and get fresh fruit and vegetables at farmers markets, and in turn, helping support local farmers. This is a no-brainer, but unfortunately, this program might be on the chopping block. There is an exceptional editorial in the Minnesota Reformer from Colleen Moriarty, the executive director of Hunger Solutions Minnesota. Colleen is kind enough to join us today to talk about that editorial and talk about this program because this is a winner program we need to save. Colleen, thank you very much. I appreciate the time.
Oh, you're so kind. Thank you very much for featuring this because it is really an essential issue in our minds, and we really need people to know that we could lose this over, a relatively small amount of money in state budget terms. And it's rather uncalled for. We still have hope that the policymakers, we've had support from a lot of great policymakers. We still have hope that they're going to find the funds to keep it going. But so far, it's been zeroed out of the agriculture budget.
Well, obviously going to talk extensively about that program. I want to actually, though, give you a platform here because for me, just in my personal faith and all these things, feeding people who are hungry is such an important element of who I think we are as people. We have to, if we can, we have hungry people, get them food. That's such an important thing. Talk a little bit about Hunger Solutions Minnesota and what exactly you guys do.
Well, Hunger Solutions Minnesota really works with more than 300 food shelves, emergency feeding programs, the banks, and works extensively with the state of Minnesota to deliver resources, both agricultural resources and funding to those programs throughout the state. And we work on public policy. We work on legislative issues. We have a helpline that answers questions for everyone throughout the state about what resources are available to them. And we're actually in the leverage business when it comes right down to it. We try and leverage, you know, public funds to have even greater effect on local communities. We try and leverage local support to support, their shelves in their area. And we really are advocates at heart. We're advocates for the people who need service. We also advocate for the people who provide it, but in our hearts, we advocate for the people who need service.
And you're right, because it's not just one layer thing. It's not just hungry people. It's the people that are providing the service. It's the people that want to help, and people want to make donations, and then making sure the opportunities are there. And this is one of the key problems we've had with hunger, is that there are a lot of places where, when it comes to food assistance, that there isn't a lot of great options with fruits and vegetables out there. I don't know who ever came up with this idea. I actually had, back when Governor Walz was down in the first district, he came on and he championed this program. And
right.
whoever was the geniuses that came up with this, it is such a smart idea that if we're going to give food assistance, allowing people to go into a farmer's market and get really good food is a phenomenal idea.
Right. You know, it was an idea that was first brought to the discussion by Blue Cross Blue Shield Center for Prevention, but it's been replicated all over the country, and we're more than a decade into this program. And what we know is this, that, you know, we want to make sure that people get the best food they can using their SNAP monies. And sometimes they live in a food desert, and sometimes they live, you know, hundreds of miles away from a grocery store, and their only option is maybe a dollar store. And sometimes, you know, the local businesses in the smaller towns have closed, and they need access to fresh fruits and vegetables. And farmers markets are a great way of doing that, because it's supporting the local farmers, the local growers. And it also is, I cannot tell you how popular this program is, particularly with seniors. They are really devoted to this program. They love to go to the farmers market and get, you know, the kinds of foods that they need to have a healthy diet. It results in them being able to be independent even longer. It's just, it's a win for everybody. So we were astonished when it was zeroed out, because we know how much it means to people, and we know how much it means to local farmers market.
And you'd referenced earlier about the supply element of it. You can't underscore that. And obviously, feeding the hungry is the most important part. But the idea of – and it's wonderful you get great big donations, but the idea that we can get this money directly in the hands of farmers who are then themselves – I mean, there is no downside to this program. The farmers themselves bring their product in. They have a viable market. People who are hungry get the food. It is clearly a win-win. And to support that local farmer, I mean, one of the reasons why those farmers markets are important in a program like this is that it does sustain that, so that we're not only looking at corporate farming, not only looking at large industry farming, but we are supporting that local farmer as well, and that this program does that.
That's right. And really, it's $325,000 a year. It results in $660,000 from our estimates of economic opportunity throughout the state. And it's increased 30% in the last year. And at a time when we're coming out of COVID, when people are just returning back to the community, when they could go to the farmers market for the first time, why would we cut access to fresh fruits and vegetables for people who are struggling?
Exactly. And as you note in the editorial here, popularity for the program grew 31% from 2019 to 2020. This is a program that people find out about. And then all of a sudden, because it's the awareness issue, it's like, oh, I can go down there and go get some fresh tomatoes, some fresh apples. Why not? And they can. I think you're exactly right. I don't want to – I want to be very careful. I don't want to go political here. But have you heard any reasons why this was pulled out of the ag budget?
I think – you know, I don't know for sure, but I think that there was some discussion even in the Senate Finance Committee about the fact that maybe, you know, that there was too much help available for people who were in need. Or that, you know, that there was some suspicion that there was something, that something fraudulent could happen. You have to go to the farmer's market. You have to be on SNAP. SNAP is a rigorous income test for being a part of it. And you have this additional benefit to make sure that you can get more fresh foods. You know, it's $10 match. It's up to $10 match when you go. And $10 at the farmer's markets can mean a lot. You know, I don't really know what the fraud would be.
So, needless to say, once again, and I just want to go back to the program itself. It's as advertised. You take SNAP
right.
budgets. You take those benefits. You go to a farmer's market. The hungry people are getting quality, fresh fruit and vegetables. They're
right.
also, and once again, the farmer benefits because they're supplying. I agree with you, and Colleen, and once again, not being political, this is one of those cases where this is where government's working, and there doesn't just seem to be a downside outside of, and as you brought about the cost, and I want to make sure we also mention this, because some people do get focused on numbers, but the reality
right.
is for a program like this, this is so cost effective, and the return rate on investment is so positive, it's once again, the no-brainer category. It is a great program.
And it's serving 99 farmers markets throughout the state of Minnesota.
Wow.
It's not like it's a rural program or an urban program. It's farmers markets are everywhere around the state, and they have really embraced this program, and the farmers themselves have embraced it. So there's a reason for its popularity, and that is because it's a great use of funds,
mm-hmm.
And it's great for people, and it's great for farmers.
I will say this one little bit of positivity is that I've actually heard today of some people on both sides of the aisles, including on kind of more on the extreme sides, have both said, no, this is a program worth saving, which is good. I mean, if you got people
yeah.
on both sides that are saying, nah, this is a good one, we need to keep this, that's a good sign. But we want to encourage people. This Market Bucks program is so good. What do you want people to do? If they're listening right now, how can they help to make sure Market Bucks stays alive and that we are able to keep a great program like this keep going in here in Minnesota?
Well, I think they can contact their local legislators, but I also think that leadership needs to be, you know, reinforced. We do have some wonderful support. We just didn't have, you know, the kind of support that we needed in the Agriculture Committee. But there are really dedicated lawmakers in our state government who really want to see this find a place. And then most especially, the governor has been very, and the lieutenant governor have been very supportive. So I just, you know, I think it's, in comparison to some of the big asks for in transportation or other things, you know, it's $325,000 that just results in more good things happening.
And that is $325,000 is not a lot of money when we're talking state budgets. This is a drop in the bucket, and the return on investment is there. It's across the board. It's a fantastic program. Contact your local politicians. Save the Market Bucks program. That can get done. You have to call today or tomorrow because these bills are getting wrapped up. And so make sure that's in there. I also, once again, Colleen Moriarty is the executive director of Hunger Solutions Minnesota. I want to drive people to your program too, because this is one fight. You guys are doing the long-term fight. You're doing, like I said, my personal feeling, you're doing God's work, trying to get people food. And I love that program. How can people find out more and help your organization as well?
Well, you can go to our organization at hungersolutions.org. You can see the kind of programs that we work on and the partners that we work with. And we are, you know, I feel like as an organization, we're really nimble and able to respond to things. I also think that we're asking the really tough questions about how food access works or doesn't work. We're not blind to the fact that some people have a difficulty, you know, accessing even food shelf services. So how is it that we can look at new models of service and support the ones that we have and make sure people are getting what they need? We're asking those questions of ourselves. We're probably tougher on ourselves than any grants administrator could be. You know, we are a small but mighty staff of 13 who are committed to this mission.
And a good mission indeed. Hungersolutions.org, is that correct?
Yes.
Hungersolutions.org. I'll link to everything after the show, including we'll spotlight this interview. Colleen Moriarty, the executive director at Hunger Solutions Minnesota. Colleen, congratulations on the editorial. Very well done. All my best on this issue. And by all means, come back anytime you'd like, okay?
Oh, thank you so much. I'll be back.
My pleasure. Thank you for coming.
All right.
Colleen Moriarty joining us. We'll take a break. Come on back. I've got a few other points to make about this issue when I do return. It's the Matt McNeil Show on AM 950. Thanks, Colleen Moriarty. I appreciate you coming on, talking about the show. We're going to push that aside for a quick second so I can address who the clown car is that did this. Welcome to Tori Westrom's world. He's the ag chair, and he says he's Christian. Tori, you suck at being Christian. I'm just calling it as it is. Have you read the book of Matthew? Feed the hungry. That's what it says. It doesn't mean you make statements like this. And I mean, apparently, this is the thing here. And a nonpartisan staff presented a spreadsheet for the ag bill agreement and stated the Senate position and negotiation was to oppose the Market Bucks program. When asked why the Senate opposes the program, Johnny Christian over there says he opposes the program because of double dip and SNAP benefits was Chair Westrom's answer. Now, first of all, Chair Westrom, you clearly don't know how this works. You're an idiot. No, seriously, you're an idiot. You don't know how the why are you in charge of making decisions for programs you don't understand? Because there's no double dipping here. They just take the SNAP benefits, and as opposed to buy, I guess what is this, Tori? Is it you just don't like black people and people with don't have white skin color buying anything but what Cheetos and Mountain Dew? Is that what this problem is? I'm asking, is that what the problem is? Because it seems what you're saying is you don't understand that, no, as opposed to using these SNAP benefits at a grocery store, at a gas station, someplace else, they'll just go use them at the farmer's market, get fresh fruit and vegetables, and then the farmers benefit, and there's no double dipping. That means you're just an idiot. And if you're that stupid, Senator Westrom, and I mean stupid, brick dumb moron, that you don't understand how the program that you're trying to regulate operates, then you should step down and get the hell out of the way, you idiot. Do you know how bad Westrom screwed this up? Brett, I am not a proud man, but I have to say, do you know who came in and defended the program after Senator Westrom, Johnny Christian himself, oh, screw the hungry. After that, do you know who had come in on my side?
Oh, who's this?
Senator Mary Kiffmeyer. Oh, God. It hurts. It hurts. Westrom.
The new BFF.
Oh, God, no. Not that. You're so extreme, you idiot, Westrom, that Mary Kiffmeyer is on the moderate side of your stance. What's wrong with you? Oh, and I know you got to stick up your backside so far you're going to be, I know what I'm doing. No, you don't know what you're doing. You don't know that this is not double dipping. You just want to take away food from hungry people, which makes you a sucky Christian, a sucky senator, and a sucky human. And that's from me, Matt McNeil, to Tori Westrom. Eat that. Maybe you can get that on SNAP benefits at the farmer's market. I don't know. It's a little roasty this year. But how are you against a program that works this well? You are the reason why government sucks. You and Ingebrigtsen, when Mary Kiffmeyer's going after the Historical Society, yeah. The reason why you clowns don't want to have negotiations in public is because you guys are evil and dumb and stupid, and that's why you have to do these things behind closed doors, like killing the insulin Emergency Insulin Act and stuff like that. This is one of the few examples we have in this country, in this state, of government that works. You can take your SNAP benefits, use it at a farmer's market, you help out the farmers, the hungry get food, and they get fresh food. and you can't stop yourself. Is it about the skin color of the people that are getting it? Because let me tell you something, Senator. There's a lot of white people that are getting SNAP benefits too, especially in rural Minnesota, who love those farmers markets. As we heard, 99 of them take these SNAP benefits. How are you guys this bad at your job? Seriously, how are you this broken and evil on the inside? Is it just about the lobbying gig? Is it just about, you know, people sucking up to you because money, 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 money? Am I missing, Brett, am I missing something here? I mean, I know you want to stay out of the way when I'm going after Westrum. But no.
I don't know what you would be missing. What's the benefit of eliminating this program? Does it really save any money?
No.
No, of course.
And actually, as you said, it actually ends up generating more money. It's a drop in the bucket. But if you don't know, it double dips. You don't know how the program works. And why are you there? Why are you there? If you don't know how the program that you are supposed to write the bill for works, why are you there? This is the problem with Republicans. They take a bunch of unqualified buffoons and they put them into House and Senate seats and they act as if that gives them provenance and it gives them some sort of credibility. And the reality is you've just put a fool in a Senate suit and you just put a fool in a House suit and they don't know what they're doing. And they just think that because I'm a senator now people have to respect me. No, I'll respect the position, but the human being that holds that position? Oh, hell no. I am not respecting you. I will not respect you. You have to earn that respect. And this is a great example of how you do not earn respect. I'm done.
I just wonder if he comes from the perspective, like, I know there are a lot of Republicans that do that. If you're on SNAP benefits, you only get bread and water, and that's it.
How about, remember that was, what state was it that said you get a ball of meat, a packet of flour, and one thing of milk, and that's all you get? And it's like, and someone said, and you think this is Christian? So I'm giving them food. Yeah, I don't think Jesus was like, whoa, 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 pull that card over here. Let's see what you got. No, no, no. Take those fruits and vegetables out of here. Here's your flour. Here's this. You go do this.
You having the disciples acting as inventory?
You know, hey, when I said feed the hungry, double dipping. Whoa, what's this about double dipping? You guys are horrible. How are you? It's like, are you guys just going to, you know, go get Snoopy and start punching him now? Is that where your next thing is going? Because you guys are just stellar with your decisions at this point. 9-5. I can't believe. What an idiot. Westrum, how are you this bad at your job? Seriously. That Mary Kiffmeyer has to become the moderate voice of reason. Wow. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. Now I'm done. I still got about a billion things to get to before the end of the show. We'll take a break. Come on back. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show. I got to try to get to the racist paradox coming up here. Also, I got a special message for the U.S. Catholic Bishops Association from a Catholic myself. I'll share that coming up here in just a sec. Like I said, a little bit of a heavy news day. And my final point, let me call a whole bunch of Catholic bishops heretics. It's going to be a good show here. You know, we're rolling with the punches.
They deserve it, though, but I'm sure you'll get to that later.
I'll get to that later. I got to get to two stories. We got breaking news on. I want to make sure we go over this here from Bring Me the News. The man who's accused of plowing into a crowd of protesters in Minneapolis Sunday night, killing Deonna Marie Erickson, injuring three others, admitted he sped up to jump a barricade, charges say. Now, I'll come back to that in a second. Nicholas Krause, 35, of St. Paul, is charged with intentional second-degree murder, accused of being drunk while he crashed into protesters. He's also charged with two counts of second-degree assault with a dangerous weapon. At the time of the fatal crash, he had multiple DWI convictions, and he didn't have a driver's license, and his SUV was registered in another person's name. Here is my problem with this. From the very beginning, they have said alcohol, drugs. Now, I'm not saying alcohol and drugs didn't play a role, and I think very quickly on Monday's show when this story broke, we talked about, I'm not saying that wasn't a factor, but we don't know really what happened because the most important thing is something that he admitted, that he sped up to jump the barricade. Now, Did he speed up to you know, knowing the barricade was there? I don't know. But by focusing solely on the DWIs, the drunk, all this stuff, once again, white guy does something, and we're making, oh man, the scourge of alcoholism. Oh, you know, another chronic DWIer. Like it's some sort of Mayberry drunk out of the bar. Uh-oh, trying to lock him back up in the cell until he sobers up. He got into a car and he charged a barricade, killing a woman, injuring others. And excuse me if I'm not 100% convinced that his motivations weren't just drinking, but might have been something else. Don't get me wrong. This guy doesn't sound like he's got a lifelong history of smart decisions. But at the same time, he admitted, and by the way, all the eyewitnesses' accounts that most of the media ignored on the first day, 100% true. He accelerated and tried to he accelerated and rammed the barricade. I think we need a little more information before we can determine motivation. Once again, not saying drugs, alcohol don't play a role. But that's not the excuse here. Please. Erickson and others were near West Lake Street and Girard on South on Sunday evening protesting against the June 3rd law enforcement killing of Winston Smith at around 11:39. A motorist plowed through the gathering, injuring three people, killing Erickson, police said. Erickson's brother, Jarrett Knajic, told the Star Tribune she parked her car as a barricade to protect protesters when the SUV struck her vehicle and then hit her. According to the criminal complaint, Krause had told investigators he saw that car that had been used as a barricade and believed he needed to get over it, so he floored it in an attempt to jump the barricade. He told police there were a number of people in the area, including some people next to the barricade. He admitted, though, he might have hit a person or people as he was driving the barricade. So he admits he saw people, he admits he saw the barricade, and he still rammed the barricade. Jack Daniels. No, you can't say that. You don't. He attacked the barricade. He attacked the protesters with his car. Witnesses had told police the vehicle accelerated as Krause approached the barricade. The complaint states, noting surveillance video confirms witnesses' accounts the vehicle was speeding up before the crash. One witness who suffered a leg and rib injury said he was standing next to Erickson when he saw the SUV coming towards them, noting the SUV hit the vehicle that was set up as a barricade, and then the vehicle hit them. Another protester who was also injured told police he was on the sidewalk when he heard people yelling car, and then he looked up and saw the SUV accelerating towards the group, hitting the barricade vehicle, noting he got pushed into a chain-link fence. The defendant, Mr. Krause, in the Uptown fatal incident in which struck and killed the peaceful female protester, was while intoxicated and injured additional protesters in an extreme and violent intentional act. Agreed. This is from Hennepin County Attorney Mike Freeman. Agreed. It was an intentional act. His behavior and admittance to intentionally driving towards the protesters is one important reason we have charged him with intentional second-degree murder. He intentionally did it. Okay. Krause makes his first court appearance tomorrow. A number of activists have denounced Krause as a terrorist and white supremacist on social media. The criminal complaint makes no note of any political motivation of Krause's actions. I don't know what you can say, but you know, you can make the argument. He charged the barricade knowing there were protesters there and rammed it and killed someone. So stop using alcohol as an excuse here. You don't know what his motivation is, and we that needs to be fully investigated. I have hope that that does get fully investigated.
By the way, when you hear other news stories where they talk about a murder in the city or wherever else, they never say, well, alcohol may have played a factor in why he killed.
Drugs. Yeah, exactly.
They never excuse it. It's always he murdered or this person murdered another person. They don't say because of alcohol.
You're 100% right. And notice it is when generally the suspect is a black man. When the suspect is a black man or Native American, Latino, Hispanic, Mexican, Southeast Asian. You know, it's the narrative is always the same, isn't it? Don't say drugs. They knew what they were doing. They knew what they don't say alcohol. They knew what they were doing. And all of a sudden, white guy hits a ram. Oh, wow. Have you seen the problems this guy has with alcohol? No. Stop it. Erickson told Pine City, originally from Pine City, told it was a mom of two daughters, age 11, 13. Help if you can, please. She worked as a program manager in Cottage Group in Burnsville. Was active on social media and social justice issues. She was outspoken about law enforcement and police shootings as well. She was set to turn 32 this week after her death as well. Mark 1 year of sobriety. Protesters have continued to gather in Uptown holding vigils to remember her and Smith. On Tuesday night, police cracked down protesters on Lake Street. They didn't remove the barricades. I've said this in regards to the attempt by protesters to block Lake Street. That was not going to happen. And I'm going to let you know at this point, they're not going to allow that to happen. National Guard is on standby. Someone made the point, is like, why is Governor Walz calling out the National Guard? Okay, well, maybe he calls out Minneapolis police. Oh, no, that's not going to work. Maybe he calls out Hennepin County Sheriff. Oh, no, that's going to work. Maybe he calls out Ramsey County Sheriff. Oh, that doesn't work. Maybe he calls out the U.S. Marshal. Oh, that's not going to work. Maybe he calls out State Patrol. Oh, okay. Get the National Guard in here. Because who else is he going to call at this point? And I'm serious. What, the Boy Scouts? I mean, that's his police unit is the National Guard. He's the leader in the National Guard. They're going to bring the National Guard out. They're not going to allow Lake Street to get closed down. They're just not. You might have delusions that might happen. I don't think that's going to happen. And well, no, it's not going to happen. I can tell you, it's not going to happen. They're going to move you one way or the other. So just, that's what's going to come tonight. I'm going to guess, and I imagine National Guard might be deployed for a while down there. But that's going to be the way. I think you need to make some sort of obviously. We need to create a place where people can have a memorial, can gather, and there's places down there. The heck with this property value crap. We need to build some more high-end condos. Take a lot and make a little park there so we can remember this, okay? And remember the people that were shot by U.S. Marshals Task Force for some weird reason, and a woman that was killed for basically just peacefully protesting. Heaven forbid we actually, respect the people. There's that. Now, that's that story aside. There's another story that's come on out. And this one, okay, the stories of this Brooklyn Park man. And I'll read the story out here because they formally charged him as well. There are some really serious questions on how a man who was by what looks like was supposed to be committed until 2022 or 2023, but was let go. I mean, that was apparently the judge ruled he was incompetent to stand trial. He was supposed to be committed, but apparently someone said, all right, I guess you can go now. And this was a mistake because there's a person that's dead here because of whoever was the person that approved this needs to answer some questions on what in the world were you doing? We trust certain agencies to keep us safe from people who clearly are not capable of interacting with society. And this individual, my God, why was he on the streets? I'll get to that. Here's this story. A Brooklyn Park man drove into a neighbor last week, killed him because voices in his head told him to, according to a murder charges filed on Wednesday. Christopher Rice, 46, was charged Wednesday in Hennepin County District Court with one count each of second-degree murder with intent, second-degree murder without intent, criminal vehicular homicide. Rice is accused of killing Paul Pfeiffer at around 10:30 p.m. on June 12th on the 9500 block of Scott Lane. Court documents show that Rice has a history of mental health issues, was civilly committed in 2019, was found incompetent to stand trial in a pending first-degree aggravated robbery case from last year. He's currently under civil commitment and diagnosed with schizophrenic disorder and bipolar type with catatonia, and court documents have said. According to the criminal complaint, Pfeiffer was getting mail when he was struck by a black SUV at the end of the driveway. Witnesses told police the SUV fled. The vehicle was found parked near the scene, registered to a woman who lived in the area. The woman arrived at the scene, admitted the investigation, told police that her live-in boyfriend, Rice, had access to the SUV. The woman let police into a home where they found Rice. Defendant was mumbling to himself and incoherent, the charges said. Defendant told officers he hears things and sees lights. Defendant then admitted to driving and hitting somebody. Defendant told officers he's controlled by a man and the man controlled him to hit the victim with his vehicle. Your problem with your case, sir, is that you fled the scene. And that's going to show intent. I'm going to be very honest with you. With his arrest, Rice told the police he has schizophrenia and bipolar disease. All of a sudden, yeah, as soon as the police get there, all of a sudden he can list off all of his problems. He said he'd not taken his medications for more than a month, the charges said. The defendant stated while driving his vehicle, he saw a male at the mailbox. Defendant stated that the voices in his head told him that the person in the mailbox had done something bad to the defendant's mother. Rice told police the voice instructed him to strike the victim and that he had seen Pfeiffer in the neighborhood but did not know him personally. Rice told police he then went to bed after striking Pfeiffer. Hennepin County Attorney Freeman? Ugh. Issued a written statement about the case on Wednesday afternoon, calling Rice's actions violent, disturbing, and intentional. Once again, I have to agree with Mike Freeman on that. He took his girlfriend's vehicle, intentionally drove towards a male victim he had previously harassed, who was retrieving mail at the end of his driveway. Mr. Reif deliberately caused deliberately caused the death of an innocent man. In a statement earlier this week, Pfeiffer's husband, Joseph Pfeiffer Sr., Joseph Pfeiffer St. James, said hate is what killed him. In an Instagram post, Pfeiffer's nephew said his uncle was a victim of hate who was intentionally run over. Today, our family is grieving deeply amidst the grief we were pleading with this level of hate to end, wrote A.J. Mansour, the director of digital media for a different media company called iHeartMedia. So that's when I was talking about this on Monday, that there was a bit of this is getting a lot of press because there was a lot of media that was talking about this. But there is a larger question here of the failure of how this person was let out, because clearly this individual should not have been on the streets. And I'm going to say something here. I'm not trying to scare people. But the question is, how many more people are like that, are currently on the streets in Minneapolis, that are supposed to be civilly committed, are supposed to be, in some sort of program to where they're getting treatment at least? And what? Because they're too full, there are too many people, not enough beds, they're just letting them go on the street? When we talk about the failure of policing, we talk about the failure of society, we are not taking care of the people that we have and just shrugging our shoulders and hoping the best. And this is not the world that we should be inheriting at this point. 952-946-6205. Okay, one more story before we get to the break here, and then I go off of my diatribe on the U.S. Catholic Bishops Association. Police responded to a large disturbance. Now we're going to Moorhead, Minnesota. Prepare yourself. Police responded to a large disturbance at a conference in Moorhead on Tuesday evening, resulting in one person being cited. The police were responding to the Courtyard by Marriott Hotel around 5:30 p.m., where a private organization was hosting a conference and several individuals were being disruptive. The conference, which was sponsored by the conservative think tank, the Center for American Experience, was about stopping critical race theory from being taught in schools. Very white crowd, by the way. White, 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 white. According to the organization's website, they've been holding a Raise Our Standards tour in Minnesota cities to discuss how critical race theory advances the leftist anti-America agenda that radically changes how our children learn about their country. When the police arrived at the conference, they saw several isolated arguments where officers stepped in to allow space between individuals in an attempt to prevent any criminal activity from occurring. Police cited Vanessa Clark, 35, of Fargo, for misdemeanor disorderly conduct. She was released from the scene. Police say a report is being sent to the city attorney. The Center for American Experiment, in a post on Facebook, claims protesters aligned with Black Lives Matter disrupted the meeting. There's no indication as of yet that the protesters were aligned with Black Lives Matter, though. However, at least one group has been outspoken against the Raise Our Standards tour. The Duluth NAACP commented on the tour stop schedule for Duluth on Thursday, calling the Center for the American Experiment a racist organization that is preaching white supremacy the week of Juneteenth. And yes, nicely done, Duluth NAACP agreed. Bill Walsh with the Center for the American Experience told Bring Me the News on Wednesday, the NAACP in Duluth is pressuring venues to cancel our event out there tomorrow. They're afraid of ideas and dialogue. I'll get to that in a second. And the news release, the organization's president, John Hinderacker, said the Duluth stop will be rescheduled as soon as we find a venue with the courage to host the event. Have you tried the water park hotel? Talk about slippery slope. Okay, no, I'm sorry. You can't find a place in Duluth to hold your event. Okay. The critical race theory is a complex idea, but essentially the academic study of racism and persuasive impact. Basically, it's this, is understanding the true impact of the racist decisions that have happened in throughout history. There's nothing wrong with learning about this, but it does bring up something I would like to refer to as the racist paradox. And what it comes down to is this. There's a lot of white people that just do not want real history told. that the crimes against humanity against Native Americans, against the African Americans, against many minority groups deserve to be told, not because of an agenda, but because that's what happened. You see, these people, they want to just do this whitewashed version of history. They want the gone with the wind version of slavery. That the slaves were, they were lucky to have the slave owners bring them across and give them jobs and do all these things. That's the history they want. And they were so happy and all this, and then they got rid of slavery, and boy, things went bad after that. That's the history they want taught, even though there is zero proof of that. That is just a made-up fantasy to try to hide up the fact that white people owned black people, murdered them, killed them, starved them, worked them to death. Stole their children from their arms and sold them. Raped them. Raped their children. So they could get cheap labor. There is no positive spin on this. It was slavery, you idiots. Or the Native Americans. That they want, why aren't the Native Americans more happy with us that we brought them the idea of property management and money? You, genocide, slavery, the Trail of Tears, the continued lies, the continued lies, line three, for God's sakes, of this idea that the Native Americans are treated equally, for goodness sakes. God forbid we actually treat history as it actually did happen. But you see, it's this narrative they build that creates what I, like I said, call the racist paradox. You see, for them, what they'll say to you is this. Unless black people admit there were some positive things about slavery, we'll never admit that slavery was really that bad. But if a black person actually did say anything that outrageous, which they wouldn't, the first thing those same people would say was, see, they agree with us. We don't ever have to apologize. They've created a paradox where they never have to acknowledge that white people were horrible for a lot of people, because they convince themselves that unless you agree with us, I'm not going to acknowledge your point. But if you do agree with us, your point becomes mute. See how it works? Ignore them. They're racists because the real world scares them, and they just want their racist world to be represented. So from the bottom of my heart, screw you guys. 952-946-6205. Hey, I got to wrap up by going after the Catholic Church. We'll come back after the break. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show. So I got to make a quick point here, okay? I am a Catholic. Now, I'm going to blend it in. I do sincerely mean the disclaimer anytime I talk about religion. You do or don't do whatever it is you do or don't want to do. I really don't care. Religion, faith, personal relationship, if you even choose to have one, is an individual choice. So you do or don't do whatever it is you do or don't want to do, okay? I'm Catholic. It's not my job to tell you how to live your life. All right? It is not. I am a Catholic, and I've been happy to be Catholic. I've got a good church. I'm very happy with my church. My kids have been raised in the Catholic Church because that's what you do. If you want religion in your kids' life, you become a parent, and you do that yourself. And I'm going to allow my kids to make their own choices on their own religions because that's the world that we live in. I believe in individual choice. The Catholic Bishops Association, which is a far-right group of bishops who are politically motivated. This has very little to do with the Catholic Church, but they have power here because they basically give lap dances to Republican politicians because they like the power the Republican politicians give them as long as they push a anti-democratic narrative. They're meeting today to try to pass a law that says they're going to not allow Joe Biden, the president of the United States, who is a very devout Catholic, from being able to take communion because they don't like the fact that he is pro-abortion. Now, My point about this is this, and I'm very hesitant. I've said this, and I'm going to share this. I have written about this. I wrote about this years ago, as a matter of fact, on a personal level. And once again, it's not my job to tell you how to live your life. On a personal level, I am personally against abortion. I am, personally. My wife and I have talked about it. That is our choice. It is up to you to make your own choice in the world. For God's sakes, I'm not here to tell you how to live your life. And I'm not here to try to force my religion on you. Make your own choices and be happy. But that's the choice we have made. The Bible is an interesting book when it comes to abortion because, once again, funny story, Jesus never mentions abortion. And it's not like abortion didn't exist back then. It was all over the place. As a matter of fact, there's a lot of books of the Bible that are that they make quotes that are anti-abortion. But there are points in the Bible, Exodus 21, Numbers, Psalm 137:9, they're pro-abortion. In the Bible, I know. If you talk to one of these people that's a zealot, they'll tell you is this. Oh, well, the stuff that's anti-abortion, that you have to follow verbatim. But the stuff that's pro-abortion, let me tell you what they meant. And it's like, okay, no. Needless to say, Jesus never said anything about that. So this is when these Catholic bishops, when these people on the far right in the Catholic Church, they try to say, you're cafeteria Catholics. Let me point out something to you. That's not cafeteria Catholic. You follow Jesus if you're a Christian. If you are a Christian, Matthew, Mark, Luke, John, those are the four books of the Bible that tell you the story of Jesus, and that's what makes Christians Christian. The Bible's a complete book, but Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. These U.S. Catholic bishops have completely forsaken the book of Matthew, direct teachings of Jesus, feeding the hungry, taking care of the sick, sheltering the homeless, and the big one, welcoming in strangers from strange lands. They violated that direct teaching from Jesus for years so they could suck up to Republican politicians for power. That's all this is about. When they go after Joe Biden, Joe Biden is not violating any direct teachings of Jesus, but these bishops, every day they get into bed with far-right loon balls, completely throw out the book of Matthew, which is a major tentpole teaching of the Christian faith. I will say this from the bottom of my heart. Catholic Church, you get this clown car group of heretics called the U.S. Bishops, Catholic Bishops Association, under control. Because if they try this, I am quitting. The Catholic Church, we're out. Our donation, everything. This political crap, you are taking a religion based on peace, love, compassion, and welcoming, and turning it into a weapon of hate. How dare you do that to my religion? How dare you, you pathetic heretics in the U.S. Catholic Bishop Association? And that should be the end of that show. Fact check me, Christians. You can fact check me. If I'm wrong, tell me. If I'm wrong, tell me. Native Roots Radio up next. Have a good one. We're back tomorrow. Until then, see ya.